This episode of The Edge is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Edge, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to Star Trek Discovery. I am but one of your hosts, Brandi Jackola, and joining me today are Liam Smart and Nick Collinson. Let's start with you, Nick. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Brandi. I'm doing very well. I think by the time this podcast comes out, I will have put in my intent to submit form for my thesis, ooh, which means 1 month to go.
Wow. Ooh.
Yeah. It's getting down to the wire.
Oh, that's amazing. It'll be so great when you're finally done. I don't know personally how great that will be, but I can imagine.
I really can't wait to see what happens with the chunky caterpillar on A Bug's Life. I'm really, really excited. I know I say this all the time, but I just need to know.
Seriously. No spoilers yet. You'll have to wait.
Yep. All right. Well, while we're at it, Liam, how are you today?
I'm great. As of the time of this recording, I've got 1 day until I finish my science degree. And So tomorrow I finish. So Nick, high fives to us for finishing life.
Finishing life.
And what about you, Brandi? How are you?
I'm fine. It's been very stormy here for the last couple of days.
Oh,
got super, super hot on Friday. And then it got cold, well, super cold for June yesterday, and it's cold today, and I'm loving it because I hate sweating. I prefer it. I sleep better when it's cold, and so I prefer to have it be below 70 degrees. I don't know what that translates to in Celsius off the top of my head. So
it's about 20, I think.
Okay, that works. Everybody's rushing to the internet going Fahrenheit to Celsius and figuring it out.
Let's see what British boy says. What is 70 degrees Fahrenheit in 28? No, that's bad. No. 28. Yeah, no, totally irrelevant, boy Siri.
Well, let's see. Hey Siri, what is 70 degrees Fahrenheit in Celsius?
70 degrees Fahrenheit is 21.1 degrees Celsius.
There you go. 21.1 degrees Celsius. I was just going to say, as long as it's under that temperature, I'm happy.
See?
And fortunately, that's like only about a third of the year.
Talking about your Siri as well, on the Unready Room, not this time because I was away this week, but last week when I watched it, your Siri was setting off my HomePod. So you'd be doing your give me a number between whatever, and then my HomePod would go off, and I'm like, shut up, I'm listening. I need to know the number.
I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay.
I had no intent. It was just funny how that works sometimes. So anyway, we're not here to talk about artificial intelligence, or are we? I guess it just depends, because Star Trek. We are today, this is Discovery adjacent, I think, and we can get away with it, right?
Yeah. Oh, we can do whatever we want. No one really listens to us.
No, that is true. That is true. So yeah, let's talk about our hopes and fears and dreams for strange new worlds. Are you with me?
I am with you.
Strange new worlds. All right. So have we really talked about this here in any great detail? I'd feel like...
I don't think we have.
We only mentioned it in the previous episode as a news item.
Yeah.
Yes, that is true. But we didn't really go in depth into any of that. So... was anybody here not looking forward to Strange New Worlds?
Yeah, I couldn't care less, to be honest. I'll see you later.
Oh, thank you for saying couldn't care less.
I know you hate that.
I really do.
This is such a brief aside, but this annoys me so much as well, Brandy.
I
think that the could care less thing is, I only ever hear Americans say that.
Mm-hmm. It's because Americans are, they don't pay attention in school, and then they continue to do things wrong throughout their lives and get very, very angry when they're corrected to what is correct. The funny thing is this only really happens with, as far as school studies, it only really happens with language, because nobody gets upset when someone corrects your math. But they get really upset when you say, hey, no, that's not the right word. The right word is this.
Wait, so should it be I could care less or I couldn't care
no,
less?
No.
Couldn't.
If so I said it right. Say I, yes, yeah, you did.
Oh, okay.
You did.
I was like,
See, if you could not care less, that means you are at the absolute lowest rung of caring. You care so little that there is not any less that you could care. If you say, I could care less, that means you do care at least a little.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And if anyone wants to know more about grammar, I invite you to listen to the Weird Al song, Word Crimes. It is my anthem.
your anthem.
It is. Okay, off the rails in the first few minutes, as per usual. Nice to know that we have our patterns down.
Oh, yeah.
So where do we want to start? Let's just start with overall, what are you hoping to see as far as the series as a whole? Let's start with you, Liam.
Pecs.
What?
Pecs. Do you know what? The more... Over the last few years, I've been listening to people talk about, I really miss the whole episodic nature of Star Trek, considering what we had in Voyager, TNG, Enterprise, etc., obviously barring the Zindi War. And I just think like, well, no, because it doesn't make for that compelling a story. I like the complex story arcs that go from, you know, all five seasons could be the same story arc, and I'll be enthralled the whole way. But considering that this will be the third, technically it'll be the fourth because of Lower Decks, but this is the third new live action series that we've got. And I figure, do you know what? I wouldn't mind actually seeing an episodic sort of format instead of a long form story, just because we've got already two series that are long form story arcs. So I'm actually kind of hoping for a weird Alien of the Week style thing, but not cheesy. If you know what I mean.
Yes, in other words, you're saying not TOS.
Well, no, there are some really cheesy episodes of TNG.
Yeah, there are some cheesy episodes of just about all of the series, if not all of the series. So, it's okay. So, yeah. So, what about you, Nick?
I mean, kind of the same. I also just really, really enjoy... you know, this new kind of long-form serialized storytelling. Yeah, but I totally get why people just want a Star Trek series that's just a little bit more, I guess, easy to digest. They don't have sort of big, long, overarching plots with very heavy themes. So, I understand why people want this to be just the more kind of like light, optimistic option. What I've kind of come to the conclusion that I'm hoping for is kind of like a middle ground in terms of storytelling that would be probably end up being similar to the way the storytelling went in a lot of the new Doctor Who series, where they would have each episode would exist on its own and it would kind of have an Alien of the Week thing, but there was always like an underlying plot line going through all of it. You know, even in the like the first season of the new show back in 2005, you would have references to Bad Wolf in every episode, which eventually is revealed, you know, what it all means. And that is part of the overarching theme of the whole series. So that's something that I think I would like to see.
Here's what I would like to see. The show. I don't care what format it takes. I don't care if it's, I'm going to make an improv reference. I don't care if it's short form or long form as far as the storytelling. It doesn't matter to me. I just want the show. I think from what I've heard that what they are going to have is that the characters themselves will have arcs, you know, throughout these stories that they're telling, but it's not going to be, it's going to be kind of a hybrid is what it feels like. Is yes, there will be overarching things that are addressed throughout the season, but the main stories is going to be more like Monster of the Week. So, or Planet of the Week.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. Cause it's about, you know, seeking out new life and new civilizations. And boldly going where no one has gone before.
I want consequences to happen, which is something that we didn't see in other episodes or other series.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, Janeway's lizard babies, we don't hear those again. We don't hear about Neelix's lung issues ever again. We don't hear about, I don't know, I don't remember enough TNG to say anything silly about it, because obviously Voyager is my baby. But, you know, like the consequences for some actions.
Yeah, as long as there's no reset button.
Yeah, what about that shuttlecraft that Voyager lost and then suddenly they have a full complement of shuttles again?
Hey, what about the amount of torpedoes that they have that they...
Who did the video? It may have been Steve Shives or one of the other like Star Trek YouTubers did a video of... of, like, just how many shuttlecraft does Voyager actually have?
Yeah, that was a good video. I can't remember who did it, but credit to where that's due. And the video of the amount of, like, the photon torpedoes that they go through. It's like, oh, we've only had, like, 30-odd, but we've used 100.
Yeah, and it's like, hey, we have to ration out your replicator stuff, but go to the holodeck anytime you want. but the thing that really... I actually saw somebody, this post, I think, came up about a year and a half, 2 years ago. It feels like time doesn't have any meaning, the same meaning, really, as you get older. It starts to go faster and faster, and things that you think happened last month happened last year. You guys will understand in about 10 years. But,
oh, I already understand now.
It gets worse.
So there was this person.
What is it, like the 81st of March or something today?
I'm pretty sure it's the 82nd.
I feel
anyway.
712 years old.
Yep. So, but there was this post somebody made that a person had written from the viewpoint of like your basic ensign on Voyager about all of the weird things that were happening. It's like, we lost a shuttlecraft today. And then the next entry is, okay, I know that I counted all these shuttlecraft, and now there's another one. I know. I saw the shuttle blow up.
Wait, where is this? I need to see it.
It starts to sound like this conspiracy theory, but this person has no idea who to blame, and they don't understand. They think they're going crazy because all these things keep happening, and then it's as if they never happened.
Where is this? I need to read this.
I don't know. I don't remember. I've got to find it again because it was long, but because it covers like the entire series, but it was absolutely brilliant. And I was just laughing through the entire thing. It was fantastic. So yeah, I think at this point, they're not going to screw up continuity like that. There's not going to be a big reset button.
Yeah.
If something happens, then that thing happened, and it's not going to just be dismissed in the next episode.
Yeah.
So.
No, which will be good.
Yes, that will be very, very good. Very, very good. So, okay, well, then let's talk about specific characters, shall we? Let us. So, starting off with our captain, Daddy Pike. It's going to be good to see Daddy Pike again. Because let's face it, he's everybody's dad.
Daddy Pike.
Yeah. Daddy Pike. I love Daddy Pike. So it's going to be interesting because the only experiences that we had prior to him being on Discovery was, of course, the pilot episode, the original pilot of TOS. And in that pilot, he had been through some stuff and he was having a difficult time dealing with it.
Mm.
And then the whole thing happened on Talos 4, yada, yada, yada. But now with this Pike, he knows what his future holds. And how is that going to color the decisions that he makes and the things that he chooses to do versus what he might have done had he not known this future? Do you think that's going to come into play at all? Discuss.
I'd be surprised if it didn't. Yeah, it's going to be weird to think about. I feel like this is a little bit of a sidetrack, but this is the best time I can think to bring it up. I do find it a bit strange. I think they've kind of like, they've been hamstrung a bit by this because they want to write about Pike and they need to talk about this being his eventual fate. Personally, I do kind of believe that it's a bit weird, even in our modern day, and portraying that future, that for a world like Star Trek made in, you know, the year 2019, 2020, that someone being confined to a wheelchair like that is seen as such a horrible fate. Like, there's a certain part of me that looks at that and it makes me a little bit uncomfortable. It feels a little bit ableist. So I hope that they do kind of deal with perhaps that aspect of it. You know, maybe even just having something about Pike himself being such an active person that maybe having that happen to him, like, could portray certain aspects of it that would be bad for him, or there are other things around it. Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't exactly know what my feelings are around all of this, because I do like what that could do to a character, you know, knowing your fate, knowing where you will end up and not being happy about it.
It's a little bit tricky because I get what you mean about being ableist there. I kind of look at it, though, that it's not just that he's confined to a wheelchair now. He's not able. He's severely burnt and cannot talk, he's almost like completely quadriplegic and not capable to function and talk and do anything. So I don't know. I get what you mean there. I've never looked at it like that. I don't think it's a case of just saying that, oh, you're in a wheelchair. That's, you know, a horrible fate, because, I mean, it's not the best, but it's not the end of the world by any means. But in terms of exactly what's happened to this character with the Delta radiation or whatever, I don't know. It's very hard to put my finger on that, actually. Brandy, would like help?
Well, this is the way I look at it, because, you know, Starfleet and the Federation, they have all this magnificent technology and can, you know, heal a lot of ills. But one thing that they cannot do is heal nerve damage, because that would require augmentation. And as we all know, augmentation has been outlawed in the Federation. So when situations like this happen, there is no recourse for that person who has been injured. And in essence, he is trapped in a body that does not respond to anything, any brain stimulus whatsoever. He cannot move at all. He uses basically, I don't even remember how they described it, but it seems to me like it's sort of a connection with the chair. So brain impulses can tell the chair what to do. And he can basically make one beep for yes, two beeps for no, or what have you. And that's all he can do. And how would any of us feel to be sort of trapped in that physical form in which you could not express more than yes or no and could not even move without the assistance of mechanics?
It's not something that I would desire at all.
Yeah. At all. So I don't think it's looking at it as, you know, they're being ableist about it. It's just one of those horrifying things that no person should have to go through. And,
yeah,
you know, I don't know if people had a choice between that existence and dying. I don't know how many people would choose to live that way. It's very difficult. It's a very difficult situation. So I never looked at it as, you know, oh, he's in a wheelchair and he thinks, you know, everybody looks at that like that's the worst thing that could possibly happen. It's more than that. It's not being in a wheelchair. It's being trapped in a non-responsive body. That's the scary thing.
I don't know. Yeah. And like I said, I mean, I think I trust the writers and Anson Mount to handle this whole storyline in a sensitive manner.
Absolutely.
And if they do, you know, well, I guess if and when they do address it further, I'm interested to see how they do. Hopefully, even with an exploration of what that all means.
Do you think we'll see Pike trying to find ways of getting around or not? When I say getting around, is in trying to find ways to make that future not happen?
If that had happened in a different situation, like if he had seen his future in a different situation, I would say maybe. Judging by what he's been through, I'm not sure he's going to try to fight destiny or fate or whatever you want to call it. I don't know. I mean, all of us don't want to think that we're always going to end up in the same place no matter what we do with our lives, that our end is always going to be the same. So, you know, it's one of those things where like somebody goes into the past to try and fix something that happened. And by fixing it, that just means something else happens down the road that creates the same result. And just, you know, some events are just time locked. Sorry, that's a Doctor Who reference.
Oops. Another Doctor Who reference. Yeah, I mean, I really liked that, you know, in the final episode of season two in the big space battle, you know, he is, him knowing that that is his eventual fate gives him this sense of confidence of feeling like, well, obviously nothing can happen to me up until then because that has to happen. So maybe we'll see that play into it. Maybe we'll see him being quite sort of
reckless,
gung-ho and confident. Reckless, yeah.
Interesting. I wonder how they're going to play that.
That would actually be a really cool thought to see, like, storylines where it's like, nah, I can handle this. I will take this Gorn head on. It can't bite my head off or whatever because I'm dying and or I'm getting injured in a different way.
I don't know. I don't know if he'd be that reckless, especially since he was kind of reckless for half of season two of Discovery until Ash called him out on it, basically. So, and that's when they bonded and became best friends. Okay, not best friends, but, you know. So, yeah.
So, there's like 9 years between when he sees his fate in Discovery to when it actually happens. So, assuming that we are getting Strange New Worlds directly after what's happened on Discovery, I mean, I'm going to assume that's going to be the case. Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of time in between then to see what happens because we don't really know much about that little time period between, what's that, 2257 and the mid-2260s.
We'll see what happens. I'm looking forward to things and stuff.
Actually, when did What's-His-Face get the actual Enterprise?
You mean Kirk?
Yeah.
Because Pike took command, according to Memory Alpha,
2250.
Of the Enterprise in the year 2250. And
Kirk was in the Academy with in 2252.
And the Cage is set in 2254.
Discovery is 2257 with Pike. By 2265.
Well, 2267 is when, in the Menagerie, the Enterprise, now under the command of Captain James T. Kirk, travels to Starbase 11. Spock, who had served with Pike for 11 years, 4 months, and 5 days, makes clandestine arrangements to take Pike back to TELOS 4, blah, blah, blah. It's set in the year 2267. Some point prior to that episode, Pike is promoted to fleet captain, is severely injured while rescuing several cadets from a baffle plate rupture on board a J-class training vessel. So it's not, that's not something that's, you know, he's not on the Enterprise, not serving on the Enterprise anymore.
No.
The Delta Ray radiation leaving him paralyzed, unable to speak, badly scarred, and using a brainwave-operated wheelchair for mobility. And his only means of communicating is through a light on the chair, one flash meaning yes, two flashes indicating no.
Yeah. So it says in Memory Alpha, though, that Kirk took charge of the Enterprise in 2265. Anyway, so it's like nine-ish years of Captain Pike before that happens, and there's, I guess, 8 years between Discovery and when Kirk took over the Enterprise. So we've still got a fair amount of time that we can bite through.
And besides, a whole season doesn't necessarily depict in a whole year.
No, that's true.
Necessarily. Exactly. So there's lots of stuff they can do there. And I think, you know, I'm really just excited that we're going to get more of this character because I already loved Anson Mount before he got on Discovery, and some people have had prior experience with him through Hell on Wheels. My first exposure was actually Marvel's Inhumans, which sadly was not a great show, but he was great in it. And so the rest of the world who had no idea who he was got to see the magic that is Mr. Anson Mount. So super happy that we're going to get more of that because honestly, I can't think of a better person for that role. Even like fantasy casting, I can't think of anyone who could possibly do that better, who could have this mix of, you know, dead seriousness and, you know, levity at the same time. It's a difficult tightrope to walk, and he does it so well. Anything else we have to say about Mr. Anson Mount's Pike?
I just hope his character continues to be the same way he was in Discovery. Because it's a really, really calming person.
Yeah, I have no doubt.
Yeah, I think I really like that he, like, sort of on a surface level and, like, physically he fits all of the, like, archetypes of that sort of older, more, like, patriarchal idea of Star Trek. You know, he's that sort of upstanding sort of white guy with a square jaw, but he is so, like, calm and caring and just, like, open to other people's thoughts and opinions and experiences. So, I don't know. I just really like that about him. And I hope that him fitting that sort of external archetype, but then being in himself such a good person and, like, a good character, and also Anson Mount is such a good person, that that would hopefully inspire more of the people watching that character to emulate that.
Agree. All right, moving on to my favorite Vulcan. Let's talk about Lieutenant Spock. What do we hope we're going to get there? I'll just be frank. I hope I get Spock. That's all I care about. I just want Spock. I want more Spock. I'm going to get more Spock. So I am happy. What about you guys? Liam, what do you think?
We know so much about Spock, whether that's from TOS, what we've learned from Discovery, what we see in his appearances in TNG, and then in the Kelvin timeline movies. We just know pretty much almost from where he started to where he finishes. So it'll just be interesting to see what additions they can make to the character. Obviously, in Discovery, we had the addition of his Vulcan version of dyslexia. So, I mean, that was pretty cool. So, it'd be interesting to see what they can actually add to the character instead of maybe just playing on what we know of his character.
Yeah. What about you, Nick?
Again, like, mostly the same. I mean, Ethan Peck does such a good job of playing this version of Spock. He brings his own flavor to it and is very much his own version of it, but it is still so grounded in the character we already know as Spock, of, you know, Leonard Nimoy's portrayal. And, like, I really, really enjoyed seeing him, you know, portraying Spock's first day on the Enterprise in the Short Trek Q&A. And it will be really interesting, I think, seeing, you know, this earlier version of Spock kind of growing into the version that we know from the original series and everything past that. And also, I'm looking forward to kind of more interplay between him and Pike and seeing how that is different from the sort of interplay and friendship between, you know, Leonard Nimoy Spock and Captain Kirk.
Do you know what I don't want from Spock? And we saw a potential little hint of it in the Q&A, short trek. I'm hoping that they don't try and develop a relationship between him and Number One. I would be most disappointed if I saw something like that.
I don't see, the thing is I didn't really ever see that because of the whole thing where he's asking her about Captain Pike and she's telling him these things, these three, you know, salient facts about him. And he says, you've done a most careful study of the captain. She gets really uptight. It's almost like, oh, crap. He cannot know I've got a thing for the captain.
Well, that was the original thing with Number One, though. She in the cage, like their description was that she did have a thing for Pike.
Yeah. But she didn't want Spock to know that. She didn't want anyone to know that because she doesn't want people to... She wants people to see her mind. She doesn't want people to be gossiping about her love life. That's not... Number One is an extremely logical and... what's the word I'm looking for here? I know what the word is. I just can't find it.
Professional?
No. But that's a good one. You know, she knows how to control herself, but that's not what I'm trying to say. It's just...
Not reserved.
Yes, but not that either.
I think I get what you...
She's very, you know, she's self-controlled, but it's the wrong word.
Mm.
I hate when I do this because I know I'm going to hear the word in my brain after we're done recording, and I'm going to be yelling at you guys. It's
just
going
to message it all caps at both of us.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, yeah. I personally feel like with what they've done with Spock and Discovery, that there's a lot more to explore there than we think, because there's this missing part of his journey. We know very, very little from the original series of his relationship with Captain Pike, other than he is willing to, you know, basically commit mutiny and steal a starship to get him back to Talos IV. So, you know, that level of loyalty is pretty massive, you know, and I don't think at that stage of the relationship between the characters in TOS that any of them were expecting that. You see that later on, especially in the movies, that level of loyalty, because now they have the relationship to back that up. They have the experience with each other to back all of that up. Unfortunately, McCoy never stops being racist, but, you know, what can you do? Those old Southern doctors, I'm telling you.
That's actually a pretty good point there, though, that there is, we don't know quite why he's so loyal to Pike, but that could be an easy link back into Discovery that Pike could be his confidant about Michael. And yeah, because obviously Pike and Number One know about Michael and everything that happened with the Discovery.
Yeah. And so he can't talk about that. He can talk about that with so few people, you know, basically his parents and Number One and Pike. And even then, he's probably thinking, I shouldn't ever talk about this because someone could hear me, etc. I don't know if he ever would talk about it. I guess we'll see. That will be interesting. But I do think that they have some ground to cover there to get from the Spock that we saw in Discovery to the Spock we saw in TOS. So I'm just glad I get more Spock. Yeah, we've already mentioned her before, but let's go a little more in depth. Let's talk about Number One.
Yes. So, Commander Una.
Yeah, it's your turn to go first, Nick.
You know what? I think I might be most excited to see... Commander Una, Number One, get kind of more fleshing out of her character. I think maybe because she's the one we know the least about out of the main three. I quite like that her name is, you know, canonically Una, which originally came from the novels. Not just that that's what she was named in the novels, but also named after Una McCormack, who's my favorite of the Star Trek novel authors, which I think is just a really nice reference to her and her tribute. But, like, I really enjoy Rebecca Romijn's portrayal of her in Discovery, in the, like, the little we saw of her. Like, she seems like she is, you know, kind of no-nonsense and businesslike, but she's not, like, you know, she's going to be super harsh or hard on anyone, and she doesn't seem mean. She's just, like, someone who is just super, super competent in what she does, and she gets the job done. Oh, is that the word you were looking for?
No, no, no. The word I was looking for was disciplined.
Yes.
I don't know why I couldn't think of it. I hate being old. Oh.
Well, yeah, and she certainly, and disciplined is the perfect word, because it's like she, I think that's the perfect word for someone who, you know, is just really good in any kind of situations where you have to be kind of businesslike and you have to get the job done, and but it doesn't imply that she is cold or unfeeling, because I didn't get that sense from her at all. She was, you know, definitely someone who still has, you know, friendships and friendly relationships with the people she works with as well. And it might be fun to have Rebecca Romijn singing more Gilbert and Sullivan.
I don't think that's going to happen. Just because she would never let that get out. Not Rebecca Romijn, but number one. So, Liam, what do you want to see?
I love Rebecca Romijn. Like, I loved her as Mystique in X-Men. The X-Men, like the original movies. I liked her as Alexis in Ugly Betty. I think she's a wonderful actress, and she will absolutely smash the role of number one. We've already seen her, obviously, in a couple of episodes of Discovery, but to actually flesh out her character and give her some more work to do with the character would be great. For a character that NBC decided that they didn't want because they didn't want a female character on the bridge being second in charge of a whole starship, it's really upsetting that we never got to see Majel Barrett do that role, but it's awesome now that we get to see Rebecca Romijn do it now. She's an amazingly smart, efficient, as Brandy says, disciplined character. Yes, we've said that she probably has a thing for Pike. I hope we don't see that develop either. I don't want to see love stories or anything like that. I want her owning everything that she does.
It's my personal feeling that she will never reveal her feelings to anyone, especially not Pike. Because, again, discipline. She's just never going to do that. That's my personal feeling. Yeah, I am going to be an echo chamber and say, again, yeah, basically the same thing you guys said. Because I think the first time I did see her was as Mystique in the X-Men movies in the 90s. Oh, my Lord. She looks fantastic. That should not be a factor, you know, how well a woman ages, because unfortunately, all actresses are still judged by that first rather than their ability. So, I'm...
Sorry, you make that point, but one of the original bits from her character written in Star Trek is that, and it sort of annoyed me, the fact that she's an almost mysterious female who will always look the same at 20 years and at 50 years. Like, that was defined in her character. But anyway, that's just a side point. But that's just what annoyed me when I read all this information about some of these characters from The Cage, how they designed it all around love or looks or something. And that's just terribly 60s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because what did they do when... they went with the Kirk version of Star Trek and gave Majel the role of Christine Chapel. All she was there to do is be in love with Spock.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so frustrating because she's way more talented than anyone gave her credit for. I mean, just look at her as number one and then think about Lwaxana Troi and how different those two characters are. And that's the same actor. That's the same person. And I just feel like she got the short end of the stick on that one. And
definitely.
I would have liked to see her do more of number one. What I'm hoping for is I want her full backstory to be canon. I want it discussed on screen. I want to know exactly why she's called number one. I mean, that's alluded to in novels, but
the novels are sort of about her being Illyrian and not human.
Yeah.
But in canon, she is actually human.
If I remember correctly, in the novels, she was born and raised on Illyria, but she is still human. She has always been human. But that's what I understood. If I'm wrong, I'm sure plenty of people will correct me on the Babel conference, but that is what I recall. I think
you're right.
So, but I want that backstory to be canon. I want to know once and for all, really, if her name is actually number one and Una was just a name given to her for convenience or as a nickname or what have you. I want to know. I want it to be canon. I know I'm weird like that.
Oh, I know. Having a backstory for a character is amazing. Like,
Yeah. I just want to know. Anyway, let's see. Is there anything else anyone wants to say about number one?
I just want her. I liked at the very end of Discovery how she was very, or maybe not sassy, is not the right word. I don't know the right word for it. But she was talking to the admirals and you're saying, are you sure that this is what happened? And she's just like, it exploded. How many more times do I need to tell you? Like that kind of attitude I really enjoyed from number one. And I hope we sort of see that kind of no, what's the word that you used? Kind of like a nonsense kind of attitude, but no nonsense kind of attitude, yeah.
Yeah, because that's the thing. You're wasting her time. You're wasting her time. Don't waste Una's time. She does not like that. She's efficient and disciplined, and she does not appreciate people wasting her time.
Yeah.
All right. So another person who we know is canon on Enterprise is Ensign Theris Seydoux.
Cadet.
Which we saw in cadet, a short cadet, trek as cadet, well.
Cadet.
Is she still a cadet? Or was this her, was
no, she's cadet.
Ask not like her final test and then she was promoted. She was like graduated and will come in as an ensign. I'm not sure.
No, she's a cadet because she was doing a training module, wasn't she?
Okay.
Yeah, she was doing a training module, but once she got to Enterprise, that doesn't mean she was still a cadet.
Are you sure about that?
I said, I don't know. No, I'm not sure about that. But here's the thing. The person who wrote the outline for Base Camp wrote Ensign.
Sorry, that was me.
You know, she's a cadet.
It's fine. Who cares? Let's talk about Theris Seydoux, whether she's an ensign or a cadet. Let's just talk about her. Would you like to see more of her on Enterprise on Strange New Worlds?
Yes.
Yeah. She seems really cool.
I'd like to see her actually as a cadet learning as opposed to Tilly being a cadet and knowing how things happen. I feel like we need to have a cadet slightly further back in the training. Let's put it that way. And I think that Seydoux could be a good sort of character for that, especially as we get to see her in engineering. She could be playing around with all the engineering stuff and learning and, you know, she could screw something up potentially and as a learning thing for an episode. I just think that we've got a wonderful character that's already there and everyone already knows. So why not put her on the show?
I think for a character who is in a, what, like 10-minute short trek, if that.
She made an influence. Made an impression.
Yeah, like we managed to get kind of so much of the sort of person and the sort of character that she is. I think it would be really cool, to see her on Enterprise. Especially to have someone there who is brand new to the ship, who could maybe almost be a little bit of like an audience surrogate character. It's like, you know, she is learning all of these new things about serving on the Enterprise as we are kind of going through them.
Yeah.
And, you know, we haven't actually had someone of Indian descent on the show, which surprises me. I mean, we've had Ash Tyler,
who is Pakistani descent.
Correct. What do you think, though, Brandy, about Theris Seydoux?
I would love to see her. The thing that the way that I have seen cadets function on a starship is that they have to know their stuff in order to get where they are. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been posted to a starship. And I think being a cadet and finishing training on a starship is more about learning how to work with a crew, learning how this particular starship functions, learning more about the chain of command and all of these things that go into the daily life of a starship. So that's just the way that I look at it. But, I mean, obviously, there's still going to be things to learn. But as far as engineering, she better already know all of that stuff or she shouldn't be there.
Especially on the flagship.
You don't play around with warp cores if you do not know engineering.
Yeah.
What is
that's
this
really cool.
Do?
That's a really good point. And it does kind of that kind of takes me a bit into the kind of stuff that I'm working with now, sort of just about to finish a PhD, is that you can have sort of a long academic career. You know, you study kind of, you know, undergrad, honors, whatever, but it's only when you actually get to doing research and working in a lab with other people that you start to realize exactly what it's like to work as a scientist. So I think that could be exactly the same sort of situation here, is that, you know, she can have all of the training, all of the kind of learned skills that you would need, but then there's also how to work with other crew members, how to work with other engineers, you know, all that stuff that you can't teach. You need to actually physically, like, you need to learn it by doing. So
Just as
that'd be really cool. I hope we see someone
just
like.
As a side note, I would kind of like the character to be on the show just for someone like Amrit Kaur, who is such a new actress in a way. She hasn't got many acting credits to her name from what I could find. So, sort of just throwing her into the Star Trek universe will just be amazing for her.
Agree. She will become a lifelong part of that family.
Mm.
So. She already has, I mean, but still.
Yeah.
All right. So, there are some other crew members that have been named, one of which we never actually saw on screen, but we heard, which is Upjohn in engineering.
Oh, yeah.
We hear her voice in Q&A.
Oh, the Welsh lady.
Seems like she enjoys
talking. Is that what
talking.
Her accent was?
Yeah, she was Welsh. That would be, I'd love it. I'd love Upjohn to be on there. That would be great.
It was never really clear whether she was just an engineer or whether she was chief engineer. I don't think they ever make that clear.
I don't remember, but so, that would be funny if she's the chief engineer with a Welsh accent. I love the Welsh accent.
That would be so great.
Yeah,
that would be good. Have any of you watched Gavin and Stacey?
I've seen parts of it, but I've not seen
it. It's just the Welsh accents on Gavin and Stacey. I just love the Welsh accent.
I do too. Many moons ago, I was watching the Graham Norton show, and he had Eowyn Griffith on, and there was a guy in the audience who was Welsh, and they were speaking Welsh back and forth to each other, and there is nothing like hearing a Welshman or woman speaking Welsh fluently. It's just, you have no idea what they're saying, but you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. Just keep talking, please. Just keep talking. It's so, they always sound so polite, even when they're saying the most horrible things. I love it. I love it.
That's like the exact opposite of Russian.
Mm-hmm. You always sound so angry in Russian and German, really.
Take
any song and translate it into German and have some German singer sing it, and it becomes a whole different mood, let me tell you. So, it's just our perception, because of where we are born and raised, tends to hear certain emotions associated with the language when that emotion may not actually be communicated by said language. So, so Upjohn, I'd love to see Upjohn. I want to know what she looks like. I want to know if she's chief engineer. I just want Upjohn. And, of course, we did see a bridge crew on Enterprise during the final episode of season 2. Not names for many of them, but Lieutenant Amin, we do have a name for.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And she also a person of color. Yay, diversity. She also seemed very capable, disciplined, etc.
I'm getting all of these because it was Lieutenants Amin, Nicola, and Mann. And I can't remember which one was which. Was Lieutenant Amin the one in the golden uniform?
No, she was in red, I believe. I could be wrong. Don't quote me on that.
I feel like she was the one on the...
May have been both.
Okay, Lieutenant Amin, I have seen. Okay, she's been in a gold uniform and...
She's been in both, gold and red.
She was the one on the top of Q&A. Oh, my God.
Yeah, she was in a red uniform at that time. So, and, of course, that was earlier in the timeline. So, now she's in the gold uniform and working on the bridge. I couldn't really tell if she was con or if she was ops. But
Una is cons. Una is on con because she's also the pilot of and the first officer.
Right. So then she would be ops. So, right. Cool. So
okay,
and is also good at mountain climbing.
Apparently so. Yep. And you got Lieutenant Nicola as well. He's a character that's at the back in red. And then Lieutenant Mann is on the side that I think Spock normally sits on. But the one that is really interesting though is Colt. So obviously there's Yeoman Colt from the Cage, but in which was a human. But in this, Colt has the spiky red skin.
Yeah.
Ah, that is the spiky one.
Is Colt, yeah. Which, to be honest, that's probably my least favorite alien design because to me it just looks like a red dragon devil. I mean, wonderful work on the makeup, but I'm not a fan of the design.
It kind of looks like the sort of alien character you can create in Star Trek Online where you just, like, put all the spikes and things and everything onto the face and that's it. But I feel like that's kind of disingenuous to just say that when obviously a lot of work did go into making that makeup and it still looks very cool.
Okay. I was just going to say, I just appreciate that we're seeing these dramatic makeup jobs and prosthetic jobs because let's do a little forehead thing and call it an alien because it's got really old in Next Generation. And in the original series. The original series, you can kind of forgive because of the budgetary restraints. But with TNG, it's just like, really? Another little forehead thing or a little thing, you know, at the bridge of the nose between the eyes? Really? Really? Come on.
Oh, it got really tiring in Voyager, too.
Yeah, I just want to see something that looks completely different from anything else that we normally see in Star Trek up to this point. And that's what we got with Colt, so I'm not really complaining.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right. Are there any other characters that we want to talk about?
Well, there was... I know there was a couple of things that had happened. So, there was... was it Dr. Boyce?
Dr. Boyce.
Was the name of the doctor in The Cage? Mm-hmm. And I know that a lot of people have been looking at pictures of him and then looking at pictures of Jeffrey Combs and being like, hey, they look kind of similar. And then have been like tweeting Jeffrey Combs and saying, would you like to play this character and all that sort of stuff? To which he basically replied, nothing has happened that's not going to happen. But thanks for your interest, I guess. I don't know. I think he was very nice and very polite about it, but basically said, no.
I don't know. I'm assuming he would be open to coming back. I mean, a job's a job if he's still acting.
Oh, I'm sure if CBS asked him, he would.
He is still acting. I saw him on the new Creepshow series.
Yeah. It's definitely one of those cases with, you know, the time of social media where people are just like, oh, hey, this actor would be really good for this character. And then suddenly everyone just inundates them with tweets and mentions and stuff. And it probably gets quite annoying.
Isn't that how we got Strange New Worlds?
It is, exactly. So,
I mean, seriously.
So annoying people work.
It is a tightrope that we walk.
Well, the thing is, you can't annoy the actor. You have to go annoy the producers for things like that. So, please stop bothering Jeffrey Combs. The thing is, though, is even if he had been contacted, he couldn't say anything about it at this point. So I'm taking everything that he says with a grain of salt, until it's absolutely proved that he's not going to be on the show in some fashion. Because I think Jeffrey Combs just needs to be in every new iteration of Star Trek, which means he needs to be on Discovery at some point. And I mean, even if it's a one-off, let's have him on Discovery. Yes, yes. Liam, you're raising your hand. Yes.
I just thought of an amazing episode of Strange New Worlds that we could have if Jeffrey Combs plays Dr. Boyce.
Okay.
We could have an episode where Dr. Boyce loses his mind and starts thinking that he's a Ferengi or an Andorian or a Vorta or all the other characters that he's possibly played. And it's like, I don't understand what a Vorta is, but I just feel like it.
That would be profoundly weird.
Remember that he had that one time he played that alien on Deep Space Nine that was really obsessed with Kira and wanted to scan her so that he could put her in a holosuite program?
Yeah. He has like dreams of Nana Visitor.
Wow. Oh, there's been one other thing like that sort of going around a bit. You know, I saw a few people mention that they thought it would be cool to see Robert April appear in the series at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Is he going to be wearing a cardigan? Because otherwise I'm not interested. If he's not wearing a big woolly cardigan, then I don't want to see it.
I just like that there were two suggestions for fantasy casting about him. One was that because I think someone in, what was it, in looking at the thing, and I can't remember where it was, but there is an image of basically Gene Roddenberry as Robert April. And I think maybe it's like test footage. So a lot of people have been like, oh, like maybe Rod Roddenberry could do a cameo playing this character if they brought him in. The only other thing that I saw, which I thought was quite funny, was someone, this was like a thread on Twitter, and I think someone had replied to that saying, what if they had Bruce Greenwood play Robert April just to really mess with people? Of course, for anyone who doesn't know, he played Captain Pike in the Kelvin timeline movies. So that's just the kind of messing with people's minds that I really enjoy. So I kind of love to see that happen.
I want that now, and put him in a big cardigan.
Can we call him Captain Cardigan? Because that's the giggle I've been having for this whole last few minutes, is Captain Cardigan. Can you point out, we could have the new uniforms. You could have red, blue, and yellow cardigans.
Oh, that sounds so nice, so comfortable.
I know. Sometimes you just want to wrap up in a nice cardigan. The word is starting to sound weird.
You can imagine Christopher Pike or Anson Mount's Christopher Pike in a cardigan, actually.
Actually, you totally could.
Yeah.
Totally
could. He could wear anything, really. He could pull it off. But, yeah, I can picture him in a cardigan. Just, you know, put it on over the uniform when he's going down to a planet. I mean, like, yeah, it's going to be a little bit breezy down there, sir. You might want to take a jacket. No, I've got my cardigan. That's all I need, my cardigan.
Would you like to take your slippers too, sir?
No. I'll keep my boots on. Thank you. I can't go completely casual, you guys. Then I'd be out of uniform.
In danger of it becoming small world syndrome with this particular thing I'm going to bring up, but do you think we'll get some other characters that we've also seen in Discovery and from Pike's past? So, like, Vena or Laurel, Amanda and Sarek.
I mean, I would really, really want to see Laurel. I would be very disappointed if we didn't, actually, because I feel there is so much more to tell with her character and that current time snapshot of the Klingon Empire and where they are.
Well, I mean, she is the Chancellor of the Klingon Empire, and the Enterprise is the flagship of the Starfleet fleet.
So, it makes sense that they would have some kind of interaction. I don't think we would see Vena or anything. Oh, actually, maybe, because he was sort of seeing visions of her.
But that's because the final vision that he had. Because in season two of Discovery, when she's saying to let them go, because Section 31 is trying to beam up Spock and Burnham from the shuttle that's taken off from Talos IV, and Vena appears to him, and only he can hear or see her, and she says, let them go. You know, you have to let them go. And then she says, before she disappears, she says, let us all go.
So, right.
It seemed pretty final at the time.
That sounds pretty final.
So, maybe we won't see Vena. What about Amanda and Sarek? Again, Vulcan ambassador?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Why not?
I mean, we have Spock on board, so yeah, I think we'll definitely see them.
Yeah.
I really hope we see Amanda. I loved Amanda and forgotten the actress's name, unfortunately, but I loved her portrayal of her.
Mia Kirchner.
That's it. I love her. She's brilliant.
Not old enough to play Spock's mom, though.
Yeah, that is true.
It's okay. It's okay.
I let that slide because she plays the characters so well.
No, I agree. I wouldn't change a thing. But she is younger than I am, and I am not old enough to be Spock's mom. So she's definitely not old enough to be Spock's mom.
She's 45. How old would Spock be? Because Spock was a kid.
It's assumed that because he's younger than Michael, so I'm guessing that it's assumed that he's in his late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah, we don't really know how old Michael Burnham is, do we?
No, but it seems to me...
Oh, no, she was born in 2226, Michael Burnham.
Yeah, I was going to say she's like 30 because the whole thing with her parents supposedly dying happened when she was 10, and it had been 20 years since that happened in season 2 of Discovery.
Yes.
So
Michael Burnham is 30. So you could assume so that Spock is like 25, maybe?
25, 26, you know, mid to late 20s.
So,
I would think no older than 28.
Okay. So let's say he's 25. Mia Kirshner / Amanda, if Amanda is the same age as Mia Kirshner, then she's totally old enough to be Spock's mum.
Yeah. If she had him really young, but.
At 20.
Yeah.
But then that creepiness factor comes in because Sarek is pretty old.
Yeah, well, that's always been the thing between Sarek and Amanda. He's always seemed a great deal older than she is. And Vulcans do have longer lives than humans.
Mm.
So, but yeah, they're fair game. As far as I'm concerned, if Spock's there, there's absolutely every reason to have them come around. Or at least Amanda. Maybe not Sarek, because he and Spock are just never going to get along for most of their lives. So,
do you reckon we'll get a mention of Cybok?
No.
Okay.
No. 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 I want to forget that Cybok existed.
Do you reckon we might get Prime Lorca?
I hope we do.
Apparently, Jason Isaacs has said that he wants to, and that I think there was a rumor that he may be in talks to bring the character back.
Well, I will say this much. There is a teaser in one of the Discovery novels, which I know are not canon, but I'm just saying, in the novels, he be alive.
Which novel is this one?
Drastic Measures.
Drastic Measures. Drastic Measures. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the one that is about Lorca and Giorgio, set about 10 years before Discovery.
No, I haven't finished that one. I didn't really like it that much.
Yeah. The one that I'm still struggling with is the Enterprise War.
I still
haven't finished it. I'm going to get back to it because there's Spock and Pike in number one, but I just, every time I go back, I don't like the story.
Mm.
I just don't like the story.
I mean, I'm reading Full Circle, the Voyager one, and now that's amazing. If either of you haven't read that one, you should read that one.
That one is amazing. There are a lot of emotions I have associated with that. But anyway, so is there anything else we want to say about our hopes, dreams, fears, whatever, for Strange New Worlds?
I don't think so.
Snap-poll, Brandy.
Mm.
What alien would you like to see that we haven't seen in a long time?
Mm. Oh, that's a good question. That's very difficult for me to answer because I'm trying to think of, you have to just kind of go by TOS and Enterprise because you're not really, you can't, everything else is off limits because that means, because anything that was introduced in TNG that they hadn't met before, we can't use any of those or anything else beyond that. So you're going to have to come back to me.
All right, Nick, slightly less of a snap poll for you because you've had a little bit of time to think about it.
Okay.
What is your thought?
Oh, no.
Oh,
I
back
actually,
to Brandy, everyone.
Actually,
okay.
Actually, yep. No. I you know, I don't know why it didn't occur to me right off. I want to see the Zindi.
Oh, yep. Oh, yes. And actually, like, decent CGI aquatics, too.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say either Zindi or Tholians.
Yeah. Amen.
Oh, Tholians have never really been on screen, except in the Mirror Universe episodes of Enterprise. You do get to see a Tholian being tortured by Phlox. But there's still, you know, that's not necessarily canon because it's Mirror Universe. I mean, it's Mirror Universe canon, but it's not our universe canon. Mm. So, yeah, let's throw some Tholians in there, too. They could do both.
I think it would be nice to see how the Zindi are getting on with the Federation, actually. Mm-hmm. I think that would be quite cool because obviously things calmed down a little bit once they realized what was going on and come the end of Enterprise. So, you know, we could have a Zindi crew member.
Mm-hmm.
As long as it's not an insectoid.
I'd like that. Yeah.
I mean, Nick will probably be like, yes, insectoid, please. But
I don't know. I would probably go for an arboreal.
Yeah, I don't care for the primate ones.
Yeah, that's just too human looking. Who cares?
What if we went to a planet and it was like part of the Zindi sort of space, and they actually had avians living there?
The lost avians.
The lost avians. Yes.
That would be a great story
because they'd have the CGI budget to be able to do avians and aquatics quite well. So.
Yes. And insectoids. Oh, my goodness.
Yes, and insectoids.
But, yeah. Oh, that would actually be an amazing thing because of what the Zindi did to themselves and, by extension, you know, one of their species, which was the avians, and how, like, pretty much all that knowledge is lost that they had. And then they find a planet. Oh, I want to see that now.
That'll be cool.
Yeah.
That will be cool.
What was yours?
I was going to say the aquatic Zindis, so, and the Tholians. So, we are all on the same mindset, my friends.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it'd be interesting to see if they wanted to do, like, first contact scenarios with aliens that are more established in later series, like the Bolians or-
ones that we take for granted.
I don't know if we actually know- when they first encounter the Cardassians. Because, like, by the time Next Generation rolls around, they're already quite established as, like, this sort of cold-ish war adversaries of the Federation.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see how that got started. I'd be okay with that. Yeah.
Maybe even Orions? We saw Orions in Enterprise, didn't we?
Oh, we've already got Orions, but we could definitely see more of them. They're fun. Yeah. Nausicaans, all those sorts of guys.
Nausicaans. Oh, yeah. We haven't seen Nausicaans in a while.
Yeah. And we haven't seen a Denobulan.
Yes. Denobulans. Let's have some Denobulans up in there.
Yeah.
And Denobulans have really long lives, so it would be really funny if Phlox were still alive. Hey, John Billingsley, you know, he's around.
Yeah. Even to
if you want to, if you want to do some stunt casting.
I mean, I hated the amount of characters that came back in Picard, so I'd get a bit grumpy for this, but if we had all of those. Yeah. But, I mean, it would be hypocritical if I didn't, but it'd be cool to think about.
I think it's, I think for those characters it could make sense, because if they are still around, it would make sense that they'd be very high-ranking in their field. So, it's like, you know, T'Pol could be, like, the CNC of Starfleet by this point or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because she'd still be around. So it's only about 100 years.
Yes, should be, yeah, definitely around.
Yeah. See, well, the thing is that wouldn't really bother me because they were a different series from.
Yeah, that's
a good
point.
TOS, and they would be they wouldn't. There's reason for them to still be around. It wouldn't be so terribly. Oh, no, that couldn't possibly happen sort of feeling.
Yeah, because that's how I felt with Hugh and shoehorning Riker and Troy in.
So, yeah, I would not, especially since we know really so little about Denobulans. Even if they didn't have Phlox, you know, we need to know more about Denobulans.
I actually just thought of another snap poll. Nick, you're first. Kirk, baby Kirk, young, attractive Kirk, yes or no?
See, that's the one where I kind of feel a bit like you in terms of like bringing in other characters. I don't think this show needs to have Kirk show up in it at all.
I agree. Brandy?
I don't want to see that. Not necessary, because we know so much about Kirk. We don't need to know. I mean, I just don't want to know. I don't need it.
Kirk,
I don't
need it. Vote no.
Because despite what most people, you know, may think, despite that I grew up watching TOS before, and well, and TAS, because that's all there was, Kirk was never my favorite. Kirk was like my, like if the Holy Trinity, Spock number one, Kirk number two, McCoy number three, because he was racist. So McCoy just, oh, he made me so angry with the way he treated Spock. Just Spock gave as good as he got, though. It's so much fun to see him get snarky and make Bones so mad. I'm like, you deserve that, you little jerk. Okay, I think we're unanimous.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
Not that we needed to be. Oh, well, everyone, it's been fun talking about Baby Kirk, but this isn't the only thing we've been discussing on the network. Oh, God, I knew you were going to
I love it.
Oh, sorry, listeners, for giving you that earworm for the next month.
Are you done?
Yes. I'm sorry, Brandy.
It's okay.
Daddy,
I'm just making sure there was nothing.
Daddy piped it. Daddy piped it.
Now that's an earworm I can get behind. Thank you for fixing that for me, Liam. I really appreciate it. Anyway, this is not the only thing we've been talking about on this network. So here is a quick listen to some of the things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Literary Treks.
Not wanting to be spoiled about this book, I would suggest then not listening now, read the book and then come back later, and then you can enjoy the whole freaking feature of this glorious analysis that we're going to give this.
I shot JR. Sorry, I thought we were getting into spoilers. My bad.
I don't know. I just like woke up from a dream. I was in the shower.
The orb.
But if you think about the fact that Sisko is with the prophets at this time, and Section 31 is going to try to kill the prophets, maybe that's a way for Sisko to re-enter the story and play his role in representing the prophets to overturn what Section 31 is trying to do and to champion that idea of Druidic and end the season with that message that religion is fine for those who want to believe it, and it's also fine for you not to believe it.
Earl Grey.
One of my notes I made on this episode is that Riker is a cosplayer. He likes to put on the native costumes of the planets he goes to.
Yes.
Ewan, I have started making a Riker Angel 1 cosplay. Ewan wants it for SLB.
So. Nice.
Yes! That was one of my notes as well, was Riker's left nipple.
Doesn't leave much to the imagination, but yeah.
To the journey!
Quick snap poll. Suzanne, would you prefer Neelix to cook for you or Chell?
Chell.
Chell? Zach, Neelix or Chell?
Neelix.
Oh. Oh.
I see Leola root in your future. Lots of it.
Oh, yeah. Give me those exotic ingredients. Yes.
Chell is my man.
I mean, you can have... with Chell, you can get like all those pun food items that he made.
Exactly. It would be like Bob's Burgers in space.
Wow.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
And in 2 weeks' time, listeners, we are going to be returning to the USS Wadley Pari and our crew there, Intrepid crew there. So in the meantime, if anyone has some fan art they want to do, whether it be of the character, ship, what have you, please let us know. Please submit it to us like on the Babel conference or email it to us. And it could be our show art for that next episode. So jump on that, you artists out there. We demand it.
So, yeah, by all means, of course, we'll also be promoting your work too, right?
Of course, of course. Full credit to whomever does submit fan art. So please, please, we would love to see it because none of us are good enough artists to do this ourselves.
I can draw a stick figure.
Yeah.
I'm okay. I'm just very out of practice.
I'm not good. I can do like faces and then after that, it's just, you know, hands and feet. No, just no.
I can do one face. And it looks like this face. Seriously, I did a portrait painting course once, and I thought I was doing quite well. And then the guy teaching the course looks over at my work. He's like, "There's a lot of narcissism going on here." I was like, "Huh." Check out all of these shows and join in the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or on the Desktop Podcasts app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. Helps us jump up the charts and find more listeners.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, in most third-party apps, and you can also stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
Despite evidence to the contrary, we'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place, of course, to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, which is B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should pop right up.
And if you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select The Edge. That email will come right to us. In fact, will come right to Brandy. And you can also find the network on Twitter at trekfm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. So, Liam, when you are not completing your final year of Starfleet Academy training in space physics on board the Enterprise, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at LS74656. You can find me in the Babel Conference. And you can also find me on To The Journey, our Star Trek Voyager podcast. So, Brandy, when you're not buttoning up your fine cardigan for a jolly trip down to Ferenginar, where can we find you on the internet?
I'm allergic to wool, though, so it's got to be made out of acrylic.
Whatever you replicate, honey, whatever you replicate.
Yeah. I'm sure I can program that. You can find me on Twitter at Brandywine12. You also can find me every Friday night doing a live show with my friends Dan and Bruce over on Dan's YouTube channel, Kurt Ratz Productions. The show is called The Unready Room, and each week we are covering a different episode of movie or movie. Episode of movie? No. Episode or movie of Trek. And we let some of the people in the chat choose some, and some are chosen just completely by random. It's a lot of fun. We do it every Friday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Again, that's on the YouTube channel Kurt Ratz Production. If that sounds a little weird to you, Kurt Ratz is just Star Trek spelled backwards. So find us there. You can find me here. You can also find me on the Dark Corner podcast with my husband, Dave, where we talk about nerd stuff and pop culture and whatever else we feel like doing. It sort of from a darker perspective, because we are gothy sort of people, yes. And, you know, that whole idea that goths never smile or never happy, never laugh, I'm absolute proof to the contrary. And you can also hear me by myself, just me, myself, and my brain on my podcast Headcanon, where I just word vomit all over all the listeners about whatever fandom thing that I'm thinking about most. And you can find both the Dark Corner Podcast and Headcanon at darkcornerpodcast.com. So, Nick, when you are not busy creating portraits that are narcissistic and look exactly like you, where can people find you?
Oh, dear. You can find me on Twitter at punkzoologist, and you can also find me on Instagram where I am at punkrockzoologist, because punkrockzoologist does not fit in the Twitter handle field.
We would love to give a shout out to our wonderful cadets on board the USS Enterprise: Norman C. Lau, Tony Robinson, Thomas Paleo, Lisa Slack, Shoab Mercer, Richard Rutledge, James Modrow, Cornelia Reutner, Ryan Mallard, and Chris Trebuzio. Thank you for supporting The Edge and Trek FM via Patreon. If you'd like to become an associate producer of The Edge or one of the other shows on Trek FM, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. And if you want me to spell that for you, I'm not going to. Thank you for listening. Oh, wait, no, that's your part.
Yeah, having a man step on my lines. Oh, what a surprise.
I'm not much of a man.
Oh, darling. It's all right. Okay. Thank you so much for listening, and join us next time to see what's happening on The Edge. Of Federation Space.
Can't remember off the top of my head.
Edit. I'm going to find a picture of her, and we're going to find out together.